Okay, thank you everyone. That's enough out of me. It gives me great pleasure tonight to introduce Craig C. from Orchid. Yeah.
My name is Craig, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Craig.
One of the things I like about being in AA is that I get to hear different ways of people introducing themselves. And one of my favorite was in Ojai, this guy would always say, "I'm such and such, and I'm an alcoholic." And then it just was a way to let everyone else know in case you were thinking about it, you know, "I'm an alcoholic." But there was another one. I didn't have a drink today, and that's a miracle. You know, I didn't have to have a drink today, and that's a miracle. And of course, by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm here today. And I have come a long way. And I thank you, Marissa, for asking me to lead on or speak on Super Bowl Sunday, because then I can try out my new stuff. some stuff that hasn't been said before. But I have come a long way since some of my lows, and I've heard about dragging along the bottom. That's what I did. I dragged along the bottom for a while, and it took me a long time to get here because, you know, something would happen and it would be good. You know, like, I got this. Everything's fine, you know. I was very unlucky to have it all together at one point, you know, very unlucky, because I could look at all my life and just say, "Oh, come on, I have a car, you know, I don't drink from a bottle, you know, in a bag on a park bench, you know, things like that." But the thing is, like, after 6 months, you know, since some horrible thing, it would take about 6 months for me to hit bottom again, you know, and some, you know, always some horrible thing. But, it would take me so long that the insanity, it take me so long to hit another bottom that the insanity was very much alive inside of me, because I couldn't call myself an alcoholic. Seriously. You know, I could walk into, "Hey, I'm an alcoholic, you know, we're all drinking here," that kind of thing. But yeah, so I've come a long way, both spiritually and you know, physically, the physical stuff, you know. I remember spending, one of the high points of my usage was, I spent about a month in a garage, you know, and listening to Pink Floyd and Eminem, and I had a notepad, you know, one of those big spiral notepads, and I was, you know, I'm going to say it, I was on meth, you know, but I had meth in one hand and Budweiser in the other hand, and what a great combination. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but living in a garage with meth and Budweiser, I had arrived, you know, and I had a job at the time, you know, and it's like, and I didn't call out, you know, and I look back on that time and think, I went into the job and I was emaciated and I stank, you know, and I went back and by the grace of God, that boss, you know, he's like, you've been sick. I could tell you've been sick. You lost some weight, you know, that's what happens when you get sick, but you know, you're back. So that's good. And now I know that that guy knew exactly what was going on, and I was very lucky. I lived in a trailer park with my mom for a little while because she suffers from schizophrenia, and she has many bouts of it, you know. And we were homeless for a while, and we found our way into a nice trailer park, and I was drinking all the time. But I knew I had a problem. So I would tell myself, get on a bike, go ride a bike, go to the beach, come back. Don't just stay in that shed next to the trailer and, you know, with doing whatever. Get out and do something. And little by little, you know, that bike ride turned into, like, you know, put my little vodka in the front basket there, you know, and I picture myself, it's true, you know, going to payphones on the phone with my bike outside of the payphone, calling somebody to go hook up somewhere for drugs or, you know, where's the party kind of thing. And I look at myself, and I remember how I started the speech. I said I had it all together, you know. But when I look back, and I was that guy with the bike in the payphone calling the hookup, you know. And that happened frequently. Another low in that time. So I had gotten married, and you know, fights every single night, and I always kept the Bible by my bed, you know, because I, complete God shot, I guess, you know, but I knew that I had to have it for some reason. It maybe made me think of living in a hotel or something, but there was always a Bible right there. And one night, I got in such a weird, you know, a weird fight with my wife, and I started hitting myself in the head. You know, if you can identify, you know, if I can share this in a room full of people and other people understand, then I'm in the right place. I hit myself in the head so many times with the Bible and yelling at my wife at the same time. Okay? That's nuts. That's insane. And then the next morning, my head, I looked like Sylvester the cat. You know, it was so purple and it, like a unicorn kind of thing. Like something out of God knows where. And I was actually, like a cartoon, I was actually working for Oprah Winfrey, okay, for her company, and it's called Harpo, and I was working in Beverly Hills at Harpo Studios, okay, and I went in that day, and I woke up, and I said to my then wife, "You got to do my makeup. I got to get into, you know, you got to make me look normal again, you know," and here she is, woken up, you know, Tuesday morning, whatever the hell it was, and like having had me yell at her and beat myself over the head with the Bible, and now I'm asking her to do my makeup so that I can go into work. And I went into work, and I had we put like a hat on and a scarf and like this makeup. I looked ridiculous, and my boss, who was the vice president of books, okay. The vice president in charge of books, she said, "You look terrible, Craig. What is wrong with you?" And I'm like, I think I have the flu. I don't know. And she told me to go home. So those are the kinds of things. You know, my home life obviously was very unhappy, especially when I was married. There's a whole thing from 16 to, you know, to 26. But my home life with my wife at that time was very unhappy, and I recall telling my mom things like, you know, "I've lost my joy, you know, I have no more joy, I have despair," and it was always getting worse. You know, now it stays the same or it gets better. You know, I can say life is like this, you know, but when I was drinking, it was like that, you know. It was always going down, and so when I started saying things to my mom that, like, "I've lost my joy," that is like that's a sign, I think. And so if you can identify with that, then you're in the right place. We lose our joy. But it used to work for me, you know, and it would make me go to every event a happier person. The woman that I was married to was Guatemalan, and she had a huge extended family, and we would go to quinceañeras, you know, and baptisms and marriages, you know, weddings, and just Saturday, you know, just parties. all the time. And I was able to speak Spanish all of a sudden, you know? I mean, you know, and I could really hold court with some of these guys. It's like, what are we talking about, you know? And but now it would be ridiculous, you know? And I had a group of friends, my wife and I had a group of friends that would go to Palm Springs, and one of them was rich, you know, the parents, so there was a sailboat involved, and we would go around. And Sunday fun day, you know, just like down in where I'm from, Hermosa Beach, there's a bunch of bars down there, so we would go and spend a lot of time just having fun. But there was no connection with anybody, you know. There was never any seriousness in this life. It was all superficial. And friends started to see these friends. They started to see that I was a negative person. You know, I was very grumpy. I started to get grumpy when I was drunk or sad or, you know, just all in all negative. And you know, and I would have a lot of remorse even after being negative, I would wake up and I would say to myself, oh man, I made last night really terrible by acting that way, you know, and I would immediately feel bad for what I had said or what I had done, and so then I would have to say some sort of shame apology to everybody, especially my wife, and I tell my current wife and other people that it was like a chess game, you know, of she was my queen, you know, and as long as I stood the queen, it's not like, you know, you hear that word all the, oh, she's my queen. It wasn't like that. It was a chess game, you know. She fought the fights, you know, like I needed to, she took care of the house. She was, you know, she was in charge. So if I pissed her off or if I deflated her somehow, I needed to right that. So I had to shamefully apologize to her for whatever the next day. I still have these, you know, I still have these things in my sobriety. I still have to apologize the next day. But it's not as bad, I can tell you that. Drinking ruined my finances, you know, when I met my current wife, Marissa, I was in debt, I don't know how much, $5,000 in credit card debt maybe, and maybe more. And then I had loans because I moved to Boston to get a master's degree, and they paid me for the master's degree, but then to live and drink in Boston, I had to get like $5,000 every 6 months just to enjoy my life, you know. So when I met her, I may have been like $20,000 in debt, and if I don't know, you know, identify or not, I don't know where you are, but I have zero debt today, you know, and I met her at the beginning of my sobriety with $20,000 in debt. So how that happened, I don't know, but I prayed for it, really, you know, I prayed for it, and it happened. Yes, and speaking of Boston, there's this place in Boston called Southie. I don't know, it's South Boston, it's where all the... it's where all the Irish people like to hang out and drink. And so drinking brought me to low places. I was engaged to my previous wife when I moved to Boston. And I would take the train, to Southie, because that's where the fun was. And lucky for me, I didn't get in any fights. They would have killed me, I'm sure. But I mean, you know, like I would go to these bars and be a hanger-on, you know, and throw darts and talk and, you know, buy people drinks and stuff like that. And then I would get in a taxi or something and spend my credit card, you know, to get home. And then my ex-fiance, you know, she would call me, hey, what's going on? Oh, I'm just sitting in bed, you know, I'm about to go to bed now, you know, so she had no idea that I was racking up this debt and doing all this drinking. But but yeah, I would I I was there getting a master's degree in English, and you know, what good did that do me? It got me a job at Harpo Studios eventually, but I lost my energy, and I lost my efficiency, basically, and you know, over many years of drinking. And when I first married the ex-wife, things looked kind of up. You know, I was like, I had this job that was pretty good, and little by little, it, you know, obviously that one time that I went in and I had to do my makeup, there were other events like that that just sort of distanced me from that kind of life. I couldn't be a Hollywood executive assistant, okay, acting the way that I was acting, and I chose to act that way. And instead, what I could do was be a part-time professor, because I have an English master's degree. So instead of working for a producer in Hollywood, let me go teach the next generation of college students. And somehow I was able to do it. So they gave me a job, and anyway, I had a lot of lofty dreams in my life that are gone now, you know. And in my sobriety in the past 10 years, I have had to kill, basically, the dreamer that I was. And I don't say that sadly, you know. I don't say that like, poor me. It was, if you're like me and you have lofty ambition, there will come calm in your sobriety where that lofty ambition is actually not real, you know, it's not necessary. And when I first met Marissa, I was working with a friend on trying to make some films. You know, we were dabbling in filmmaking and still, you know, and I was sober at that point. I was 1 year sober about. But she and I was working part-time as a professor. But she convinced me that I could be an English teacher full time. So that is what I did. I euthanized my lofty goals, and I became an English teacher at Villanova Prep School in Ojai, California. And that's what I did. I just started talking to teenagers and teaching them English. I do want to say, though, that I still crave every day, not beer, not alcohol, but some sort of escape, you know. At a certain time of day, I still think a nice cold beer would be cool, you know, after all these years. It's still there. You know, I smell the red oak barbecue wafting in the air, and it's like, I'm obsessed. I have an obsession of the mind, you know, and that's just the way it is. It's King Alcohol, you know, calling my name, and I don't think that'll ever go away, and that's okay, you know. At a certain time of day, I still get anxiety. I would say around 3 or 4, I get anxiety and fear and sadness, you know, and something. A darkness, you know, like the nothing coming to get me. And, you know, and someone said, have some almonds, you know, or something. You know, like, maybe it's your blood sugar or something like that. You know, these kinds of things. But I like to think it's my alcoholism. You know, I like to think, I identify with, I have this darkness in me that only a spiritual program can help. I do know that a drink the next morning used to help, you know? A drink the next morning used to help, especially on a day like today. especially on a sports day, especially on a 10 a.m. football game day. That was always awesome. You know, the earlier a sports thing could start, the better. A NASCAR day was fantastic, even if I didn't care, you know, what was going on. And here I am tonight on the night of Super Bowl because, you know, I don't exist. How long do I go?
Eight.
Oh, God. Because, it used to be, you know, like, oh, Alabama, you know, Rams, and Dale Earnhardt, you know, the whole thing, like, give me the hat, where are we going today, you know, and boy, did I love a big plastic cup of beer overflowing anywhere, my God, what a beautiful, on my hand and cold and in a bleacher somewhere, you know, man, I love that stuff, but that's all BS, you know, I mean, it's all BS, obviously. But early in the morning, if I could get rid of that shame, sorry, if I could say sorry and they'd be like, ah, forget about it, okay, good, you know, and if a sports game is on and someone's saying, where's the beer, thank God I can get rid of that nasty despair immediately. And that's my insanity, just get rid of that bad, get rid of the nothingness by drinking a beer. And getting that day started again. And, you know, in that life, I would wake up at about 3 in the morning, especially toward the end there. It happened a lot. And have a midlife crisis, you know, every day at 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, I have not written that movie yet, you know. I have not directed that giant thing. I haven't published that book yet. I haven't written that song yet. I haven't done the big damn thing I'm gonna do in this world yet, you know, and I'm 30 now, you know, and you know, I better go back to sleep. So then I would pass out and then wake up again, look around, find the beer, 9 a.m., get going, you know, get going. Everything's fine. Then next day, 3 a.m., difficulty sleeping, all because I would have a midlife crisis every day at 3. So getting back to that Harpo thing, I was married, and I was working there, and then I stopped working there because of all that drinking, and I just had to leave. I've never even really stopped to think about how I exited that place. And there are a lot of those, you know. I had a lot of little jobs through the years that I don't have anymore, and I don't know what happened. Sometimes I like to compare myself like Forrest Gump. It's like the drunk Forrest Gump, you know. All of these little jobs, and God knows what happened. But one of them was, since I knew how to read books, I worked for this guy named Nick. He would send me a book and $100 check. I would read the book and write a book, like a report, and send it back to him. I mean, these are the kinds of jobs you get with your, you know, after working for Harpo in the book department. But then even that stopped coming. You know, and then the professor thing, I gotta say this. I was teaching English 3 or 4 classes a semester, you know, then like 2 class, then 1, then all of a sudden I got the 4-week onboarding class, okay? That's like where I take all the students who are going to take online classes, and I teach them a class for 4 weeks, and I show them online how to onboard online, you know. Then that stopped. So there I was at the end of both things, you know, the Hollywood thing where, you know, I connect the book reading with the Hollywood thing, and my professorship thing toward the end there with my ex-wife. And I had, you know, it goes without saying that drinking jeopardized my career and my job, both of them. Because I was accepted into a PhD program in literature, and I was going to do that, but I thought, no, let me move to Beverly Hills and do this thing, and stupid me. So, because of lofty goals, you know, all because of lofty goals, chasing it, you know, and meanwhile drinking every day to get over the despair and the anxiety. So, today, just FYI, I work at a church. And I work at a church down in Santa Barbara. And it's connected to a school where my wife is the principal. You know, I am teaching little by little, more and more. She allows me to teach the eighth graders once in a while. And it still happens, you know. I say something to them, and I go home and I think, I have ruined their lives. You know, they are gonna, and that's ego, you know, or worse, you know, like, did I say something perverted, you know, are they gonna tell their mom, and then my wife is gonna, now we're, you know, because I said something, you know. I would drink over that stuff, you know, or I would drink and make that stuff go away. Now I have a different type of tool. It's talking to others, you know, it's always others. It's just, I tell my wife now about these kinds of fears, and it takes me a very long time to get to a point to talk to my wife or to talk to another alcoholic about the fear. It takes me a very long time, and I sit with it, and my anxiety today leads to moments with my wife where she's like, where's your head? You know, why aren't you in the marriage? And things like that. You know, my mind is always on some thing that I said or I did still, and I can't get it out of my head, you know? And so I ruin everybody's day because I'm still trying to figure out how to make that right with, you know, with whoever. And really all I have to do is talk to someone else and realize that I am ego tripping. You know, I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. That's usually what it is. And if there is something that I need to apologize for, then maybe I, you know, then I'll find that out. But yeah, so I now have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I ever get in a place like that, because that is what... So I don't drink. I don't drink over anything. I drink because I'm an alcoholic. So, but I would. I did not know that I had the full extent of this anxiety, despair problem. I did not know the extent of this problem. Okay, and a sponsor has told me, well, maybe you have anxiety. Maybe you should go talk to a doctor. And it's I'm not there yet. You know, maybe I don't know, but. The fact is, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have always fixed whatever it was that I was dealing with. But I did not know how crazy I was, and that's the idea. You know, it used to be David Letterman and I were taking over the world at 11:30 at night. You know, just. Funny ass David Letterman with his quirky ways. I get you, man. I was talking to him through the TV, you know, like we get each other. If only I had my own television show, I could be like David Letterman, you know. But it was really King Alcohol and I. It wasn't David Letterman and I. Those late nights when I was just sitting on my ass doing nothing with my life. I always like to share that I was arrested in Boston for domestic assault, and that was a low point. That woman, that Guatemalan woman who put up with so much, you know, just knowing me is enough, you know. I mean, but to be the fiancé of me, and I say, hey, I'm moving to Boston for 2 years to get a master's degree. Stay right there, okay? You know, like, and she did, I think. Who knows? You know, but she's gone now. But I would go out, you know, during summer. So there was a 2-year period where I was getting this degree. She would come out for Thanksgiving. I'd come home for Christmas. She'd come out for Easter, you know, things like that. And one day we went to a bar out in Boston, and I did not want to leave that bar. And she did. And that happened many, many times before that night, and it happened many times after that night. But that night, I was so furious that she wanted to leave that bar in Jamaica Plains in Boston and go and head back to our home, my home. And we got on a bus, and I was, you know, just drunk out of my mind. And then I squeezed her or something like that, you know, and she got off the bus. And so I got off the bus, and I, you know, and then I calmed down. I came to. We got back on another bus, and then we kept on going. And then I got mad, and we got off the bus. And then we were in front of some sort of bar or something, and I invited her back behind this bar in an alley. And I was yelling at her, and I guess getting physical, because the next thing you know, boop, you know, like lights, blue, red, flashing, and these guys, and Boston Irish guys, hey, leave her alone, you know, it was like, and I was arrested. I still, okay. So 6 months of my life, I did not drink because I was dealing with that court case. All right, and I know other people who have had much worse court cases and much worse situations, but then I know some people who have had less and little. So, but what I'm saying is, I knew I had to be on my best behavior because I was dealing with the law for 6 months. So it was like, all right, can't drink, blah, blah, blah. So I went to AA meetings in Boston. My fiance went home, you know, and I was going back and forth to court saying not guilty, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's extend it. I came back to Boston. I graduated. I went to LA. I got married. I brought her back to Boston to court with me. And I said, look, judge, you know, the victim is my wife. And here we are, we're married. And the judge said, case dismissed. And I tell you, there's nothing like case dismissed if you're a criminal alcoholic. There's nothing like case dismissed. And that made me feel like I had complete control over my life. And it was the beginning of a 4-year terrible marriage of more fights. Never got arrested again. As far as I know, I didn't do any more domestic assault that made her call the cops or anything. But it was really bad. I don't get in the same kind of trouble these days. You know, I don't get in the same kind of trouble these days. I could, you know. I don't have blackouts anymore. I don't have those kinds of blackouts. I used to drive home from Long Beach to Redondo Beach. That's the 405, and it's about 25 miles, 20 miles. I had no idea how I was doing that. I would be in Long Beach. It was just one of the places I was working as a professor. I would be driving home from Long Beach, miss an exit, and I'm driving, just God knows, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, I mean, and there were many of those. I remember going to a party at UCLA. I had no business being there because I was like 25 and everyone else was 19, but, you know, I woke up in the bathroom without my boxer shorts on, but my pants on, and I had no idea what the hell happened, you know? I hate that. You know, it's like, what happened there, you know? And another time in Tijuana, you know, Tijuana, I woke up completely drenched, you know, on a bench on this. It was like a club. This was the club, Tijuana, you know, a place like this. and you know, with just like a DJ in the corner and a disco ball right here, and just crowds, just like it's just this big right here, but like a million people, you know. And I was over there. I was in the. Everything I picture of, you know, from my own perspective, I can see it from someone else's perspective. I don't know why. I like that phone booth guy. So there I was over there, drenched from head to toe in God knows what, you know? And I'm sure someone had to hose me down. Maybe that's what it was. Like they were trying to wait. I have no idea. When I woke up, I got on the bus back to San Diego, wet, head to toe, you know, things like that. But yeah, I was afraid to marry the first one and then the second one because of, I don't know what happened at UCLA that night where my boxer shorts went missing. I don't know if I have some sort of thing that I need to be careful about. I don't know, you know? I mean, why don't I get tested? Because I'm an alcoholic. That's why I don't. I'm lazy. I don't care about, you know, I don't care about others. Speaking of doctors, I don't know. That's so weird. Yeah. I mean, I'm 41, okay? I know I look older, whatever. I'm bald, I got gray hair, and I have a hunchback. I'm 41, I'm 10 years sober. I have 3 children that are 4 years and younger. 4, 2, and 1. And, you know, I haven't gone to a doctor since I was 25 or something. I mean, I went to a chiropractor because I wanted a massage, you know? Like, that's the only doctor I'll go to. But, you know, like, it's time for me to start. So right now, I've gotten to the point where it's like, you know, these are the things that I need to tell on myself about. You know, I'm getting to the age where, like, I need to care about other people. And the way for me to care about other people is to take care of myself since I'm married and I have 3 kids, you know, because I should probably stay healthy. I have health insurance. I didn't have health insurance. When she told me to go get a job at teaching English, that was the first step, a salary. No one in my life had ever, no one in my family, from me all the way back to the potato farms in Ireland, never had a salary. Nobody in my family ever had a salary. We did jobs. And I got a salary because of her, you know, because of my 11th step. When I was told to go get in touch with God, and I said, I'm going to have to go to church for that, and I met someone there. And it takes what it takes, you know? I mean, that's what brought me back to church. Women, you know? the chance to find a good Filipino woman, because my aunt is Filipino, my uncle's wife, and she said, go back to church, find a good Filipino woman. I was like, I need to find a Filipino Irish woman, and that's exactly what I found. And that, I mean, look, she's more Irish than I am. That's the weird thing. Anyway, but she comes from a family where people have salaries. And that dad, my new father-in-law, it's like I had to get a job and I had to get insurance, you know? And I did that. I did that because my butt was on fire, you know? But I am still lazy, and I have to, this is my inventory, you know, because there was a time when I was financially afraid, financially insecure, and I prayed for that to go away. I prayed wholeheartedly for my financial insecurity to be taken away from me. And it worked, and it happened. So I think if I pray for me to want to go to the doctor and get a colonoscopy, then maybe I'll do it, you know, if I pray. But I have to pray, you know. Because I don't want to, and I have to pray to not want to eat top ramen every night, because I really love top ramen. I love all things salty. I chew a bag of sunflower seeds from here to Santa Barbara, and then back another bag, and I could, you know, I have, and I could, and I will, you know, but I need to stop doing that. These are the things I have to pray for, you know. I also have to pray for being, to have confidence and joy in the job that I do, you know, because there can be those times. I work at a church, it would seem so great, and it's a good salary and it's good insurance, but, you know, I still have that alcoholism. I still have, like, I should be somewhere else. I shouldn't be treated like this, you know. I shouldn't be putting up with this, you know, this, things like that. I was meant for so much, or not even the lofty goals anymore, but like, this is it, you know, there's gotta be some, what's next? But it's all because of fear, because I'm always nervous before I have to stand up in front of a group of people at the church and do what I do. I'm always nervous, and I still get anxiety after I take a group of eighth graders and I give them a religious retreat. You know, I haven't even talked about how religious I am and how I go to church, because I think I can go there right now, because this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You wouldn't believe that I won't even tell you what religion it is, you know? You wouldn't believe how connected I am to this religion. You wouldn't believe it, you know? I'm highly plugged in. I am bringing hundreds of people a year to an important place in their life to become part of our religion. That's what I do. I evangelize hundreds of people a year. That's what I do. That's my job. And it's still, AA is where I get this, you know. I had to do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to get me back to church. I had to do that. There is no other way, because I used to go to church. You probably heard these things before. I used to go to church thinking, you know, God help me. Let me not make an ass of myself on Mother's Day this year. I would always pray that, you know? And it was, that just wasn't working. The tenets of the religion don't work for me. They don't work for me. I fake it. I go into my job with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't tell them that, you know? But that's what I do there. And I come here with, you know, well, I'm Irish, so you probably know what it is that I am, with generations and generations and generations of catechism. And I bring that here, but I don't, I you know, fuck that, you know, like, I don't, the whole thing is bullshit, you know, when I'm here, because, oh, that's another thing, I used to not be able to tell my ass from my elbow, but now I know the difference between AA and my religion. I get, like, I can, I'm, you know, they don't mix, you know, if they have to, they're fine, I can make them mix, but that I think is the greatest gift that AA has brought to me. It has helped me to clarify this nutso brain that had so many things all scattered up into it, and it still does to this day. I am a scatterbrain, but I'm able to parcel out and just one thing at a time, one step at a time. Just calm down. We're gonna fold this shirt right now, you know? That is what we're going to do. Then we're going to take these two socks and put them together. And if I have to stop for a minute and walk all the way to my bedroom to put this pair of socks away before I come back and get my fucking brain back together to fold another shirt, I'm sorry. Then that's what I have to do. And it's that serious. Like, my thoughts are that serious for over stupid socks. Over just doing laundry, you know? And I used to be able to drink. And, no, I wasn't. I was never able to drink. I used to drink, and I didn't know that I had this. I didn't know that I had the need to slow down and do one thing at a time, one step at a time. you know, and take care of one thing before moving to another. So I pray that I will be good at my job. And I keep this here to stay on track. That's what I'm, you know, when I... Hospitals and institutions, that's the very last thing, you know? Yeah, one drink, and I'm either a day away. I'm either a day away, or I'm 6 months away, but it's gonna happen. I'm going to end up in a jail, because it happened twice, okay? I didn't talk about the other one, I talked about the one. So I know my pattern, you know? And if my low point is I'm going to have to crash through a window to break into my own house, you know, that was one of them, then fine. Then I'm going to have blood on my hand or something, but then I'll get all patched up and then I'll keep drinking. But eventually it's going to be jail. Eventually it's going to be jail. And it's probably going to be worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And I thank God, and I have people in AA that I have met who have gone there for a very long time. That is where I'm headed, you know? That is where I'm headed if I drink. I know the tape, you know? I play the tape through. And drinking is not in my cards. And I thank God for those people, those men who come out of prison after having been in there for years. And they come to me with, you know, and I tell them about I wanted to be a great writer, you know, I just spent 40 years in prison, you know. Like, I look at those men and I think, these are my heroes. These are my new heroes. Because I learn humility. I learn one step at a time. I learn fold this laundry. Who cares? We're all headed... As far as I know, we're all headed to home. You know, we're all headed home. So, thank you very much for letting me share.